This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Animal Central. My name's Ainsley. I'm back hosting the show. Sharon was on last week, and now it's my turn. So we've got a very exciting show today. I'm very much looking forward to having a chat with our guest. His name is John Kinghorn, and he is from Birding Eco Tours and Youth Africa Birding. How are you doing, John?
Good morning, Ainsley. I'm good. Thanks yourself.
Good, thanks. So something about me, I'm a bit of a birder. In the past, I think that was a bit of a dirty secret, but I'm quite proud about it now. I've been birding for quite a while, and I've obviously become to know quite a lot of the other, what I would call professional birders, and I think you definitely fall into that category. So tell me a bit about Birding Eco Tours, first of all.
So Birding Eco Tours is probably a birder's dream job. It's essentially a bird tour group which runs tours internationally, set departure tours, and then custom tours as well. We cover a whole host of countries worldwide, and all these places you never thought you'd visit. Wow. So South America, places in South America, Brazil and Ecuador and Guatemala. Then we go to Australia. And
do you have any vacancies? I'm a veterinary nurse. I'm multi-talented.
So yeah, it's really a dream job. It's incredible. And you just get to not only see the birds that you've always dreamt of seeing, but I mean, you get to share that with other people, which is one of my favorite things. And you get to see and witness the various, you know, cultures and that around the world, which is really grand. So yeah, it's an incredible company. Yeah. And been going strong for 11 years now.
Okay.
Run by a chap called Chris Lotz. Okay. Solid bloke. It's an incredible company.
Wow. Yeah. What's the next trip that you're doing?
Next trip is a private trip, in fact. I'm heading off now in December.
So private means it's just for you?
Yeah, it's for my own selfish needs.
Okay.
We're going to look for African pitta.
No, you're not.
Yeah, we are.
Okay, listeners, African pittas are amazing freaking birds, and I think I may have a coronary when I finally see one. Google it, it's worth it.
So yeah, Africa, the pittas are known across the world. There's 34 species of pitta across the world. Two species are in Africa, and the rest are sort of restricted to the Asias, the eastern side of the world. And they're known as, how can I say, one of the toughest families to find and come across. They're really incredibly elusive little guys. And they're small. I mean, they're quite small. So the majority of them are quite small, but they got the most incredible colors.
Wow.
So like I said, here in Africa, we have two species of pitta. We got green-breasted, which you get in Uganda. And then we've got African pitta, which breeds in the Zambezi Valley and Zambia, as well as Mozambique and northern parts of Zimbabwe.
Okay.
So I tried last year in northern Zimbabwe, and we left the Sunday. And on the Wednesday night, Mackenzie, who's the local guide up there at Masoka Camp, sent one of the members of our group a message saying, "Good morning, Madam Kerry. Rained in camp last night, pitta's displaying all over this morning."
Oh, no.
So the thing with the rain is that obviously the pittas are dodgy little fellas. Mm. So they'll arrive and then they'll hang out, and they'll wait until the rains to come. And then the minute the rains come, it just sends these blokes into full display.
Wow.
And they've got this awesome little call. It's like this little broop. And they do that, and then they flap their wings and they land on a perch. They stick to one perch.
Yeah.
And then they flash this bright, bright neon blue rump.
Oh, that's amazing.
So they raise their feathers on their backside. We tried in northern Zim last year. I had one call in Mozambique last year as well.
Okay.
But they generally only start calling at the end of November. So the last week of November and the first week of December in a year of normal rain is your best chance for them in Mozambique and Zimbabwe.
Okay.
So we were in Mozambique last year, early November, and I had what I thought was a bird calling. I mean, it's a distinct call. And I immediately freaked out. I was like, pitta, pitta, pitta. So the people on the group were like, there's no way.
I call that a bit of a birdgasm. It happens within the birder circle. Yeah. If a birder starts screaming oddly or gesturing, there's something exciting going on.
So then... We picked up on that, and then we were like, it was a good 3 weeks before any rains.
Okay.
So there was a brief little downpour, but we didn't think it was enough to send them into display. And yeah, we sort of shoved it off as a robin imitating it. But upon further thinking it through and stuff, it wasn't. It just wasn't. So I missed it twice last year. So
third term lucky.
Yeah. So we're going to be heading up to the highlands of Zimbabwe. And then we're going to be pushing straight through to Pitta territory at a place called Mpingwe Camp in Katapu, Mozambique.
Okay.
And it's incredible. That's one of the best, well-known spots for getting Pitta.
Okay.
So hopefully this year, what with El Nino and the various droughts and stuff we've had, the rains are going to be a little bit more late in the year. So we're going quite late in the season. I think we're entering Pitta territory on the 19th of December.
Okay.
And then we're there for 3 nights. And then hopefully... They're busy displaying. So yeah, it's going to be an awesome trip.
I'm turning quite green here. Sounds like a thing.
Yeah.
So within the birding realm, I mean, I started as pretty much a sort of casual birder. I love birds, and I've been lucky enough to work in a variety of jobs in the bush and all of that. So I've always sort of seen birds. Then at some point I started ticking off birds in my Newman's book. My first book, unfortunately, I lost after I went to England, which was criminal as my list was gone. But then I think we need to just have a chat about the different levels of birding, because it goes from sort of your casual birder to a term that I've recently learned and even engaged in, because I twitched the snowy egret. Twitching.
That's a sore spot.
Yeah. Didn't you get it?
No, I didn't.
I got it. Okay, good. You can have your pit. I'll keep my snowy egret. So let's just tell our listeners how these varying degrees of birding work.
So everybody has to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the birding scene today in South Africa, in the world even.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, people didn't just get from nowhere to where they are as some of the country's highest listers.
Yes.
Per se,
and explain what a lister is.
So a lister is essentially a person or a birder who keeps a list of all the birds, you know, he or she sees.
Okay.
So the most common list is a life list,
okay.
Or a Southern African life list.
Mm-hmm.
So here in South Africa, we refer to the Southern African sub-region, which is the areas south of the Zambezi and Kunene rivers, as well as 150 kilometers out to sea.
Okay.
It includes 7 different countries as well. So South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and then the two small ones, Lesotho and Swazi.
Okay.
So that's the Southern African sub-region. And the vast majority of Southern African birders keep a Southern African life list. So that's the main list and the big list. And like I said, the people didn't get from nowhere to region's top listers in a space of a week or a month. It takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see as you start recording the birds that you've seen, the more you sift through your book and the more you force the idea bird, the more you start learning. So generally, as one gets higher up on their list, the more experienced, you know, sort of that they get.
The easier it is to sort of pick up
the easier things. It gets. And the interesting thing is what I've noticed with not only myself, but with other birders as well, is the higher your Southern African list. So if you have a good foundation, I've been birding in Southern Africa for, I think it's 8 or 9 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And other birders I know as well, they've been birding for plenty of years and they've got a solid foundation here in Southern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go further afield.
Okay.
With their list as high as it is now in Southern Africa, they go further afield. They've developed various skills. So with the increasing of your list comes skills.
Okay.
So when it comes to identification, it's you know, the general feel of the bird, or the gist.
Yeah, the gist.
You pick up on calls and, you know, various features to look for, and display fights and habitats and all this kind of stuff, which you wouldn't have really known or been, you know, well, aware of, yes. If you were, let's say, 200 down on your list or something like that. But pushing up into the 800s, the 900s, even the 700s, you start getting these skills, and you know, birding's like an art, if you can say it like that. It's a hobby, but then it's an art as well, because there's techniques you need to learn.
Yeah,
and you start learning, and with a solid foundation, going further afield, you can, you know, birding is just so much more easy if you have a solid foundation in Southern Africa. So the degrees or levels of birders, as you can say, is quite often. You know, and you know, some people don't keep lists, but I would say it's generally linked to you know, the amounts of species you have on your list. But then again, you can argue, well, somebody can just go and get a local guide and get him to show you the birds. And so there's a lot of varying factors. But generally speaking, the higher one's list is the more experienced.
Okay.
But that's not always the case. Yeah. It's a very general comment. Yeah.
And speaking of lists, you have a ridiculous achievement. You were what? The youngest person to hit 800.
Yeah, I was the youngest person in Southern Africa to reach 800 species in a calendar year. So starting from January 1, I started my list, a year list on noughts. That's another type of list, is a year list. Started my year list on noughts, and I ended on 803 at the end of the year.
Oh my gosh.
So, listeners,
my list is on 320, and I've been doing this for a couple of years, so I'm now even more jealous.
But that was a very, very well spent year.
And how many countries did that include?
The only ones I didn't do was Lesotho and Swaziland.
Wow.
I could have done Lesotho, but I just ended up getting lazy. I needed to go up Lesotho to get mountain pipits, which was the only Drakensberg special I didn't get in my year.
Okay.
So I just came towards the end of the year and I just, yeah, I mean, spending the whole year birding, you started getting exhausted, and I just got lazy at the end. In reality, I should have gone there, should have got mountain pipits, and then I should have shot down to the garden route as well.
Okay.
Because I didn't get Nasna warbler or Nasna woodpecker, so that's three, which I should have got. But yeah, it was good.
That's amazing.
It was very good.
Sure, it sounds like a very tough year. So I think, you know, I find this whole birding world fascinating. Obviously, we're all united with a common love for nature, mostly, and the birds. I think both of them are interlinked. I think one of the problems historically is that birding has always been more towards the older population of people. And I have what I find an amusing story. So sometime, I think last year, I decided, no, I want to become slightly more serious at my birding. So I'm going to join a birding club. So I did a bit of research, found a local birding club and thought, okay, Bob's your uncle. Signed up and they sent me the email. We've got our first talk going on. So I toddled off there, and I think on a Tuesday or a Thursday night. And I knew that I was going to be the youngest person there. I knew that. That's what I was expecting. But I wasn't expecting to be the youngest person there by about 40 years. So that was definitely sort of confirmed my worst fears. And then it only got worse when it was so sweet but kind of heartbreaking for me when I stood there and one of the presentations was on how to use WhatsApp. So I needed to say, I ran away, and that was my first and last attempt at joining a birding club. But now you're involved with something very exciting, which is called Youth Africa Birding.
Yeah, that's what
tell us a bit about
so
that.
There's a lot of, as you've just said, there's a lot of stereotypes surrounding birding. You know, coming into birding 8 or 9 years ago, I you know, you think that birders are people who old folks who sit on their porch and watch birds come down to the feeder and, you know, sift through their bird guide and, you know, stuff like that, and wear khakis and, you know, it's nothing, not that there's anything wrong with khakis. Thoroughly enjoy khakis.
It's
thought to be a very old hobby, you know, for old people, but it's not the case. Looking in, recently getting, I got an invite, I think it was in 2013 or something.
Mm-hmm.
From a group called Next Generation Birders. Okay. And these were folks in England, originating in England. And all they did was started up a Facebook group and said, all right, guys, birders between the age of, I think theirs is 13 and 25 or 26, somewhere like that. But there's a designated age.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, birders who are this age, join and let's get together. Mm-hmm. But now birding in the UK is a hell of a lot bigger than it is here.
Is it? Okay.
So at the moment, there's just...
How many birds do they have compared to us?
It's minimal. Going there and getting, you know, 400 on your life list is incredible.
Really?
I mean, it's like their version of our 800.
Okay.
So 400 is remarkable for them. But So yeah, so their RSPB there, which is their Royal Society of
Protection of Birds,
that's
isn't
the
it?
One, yep. Yes. Yeah. Is has something ridiculous like 1 million members.
What?
So compare that to BirdLife sure. South Africa.
How many members do they have?
It's in the low thousands. It's in the low thousands. It's growing.
Okay.
But just as a comparison, so there's a lot more birders there. Mm-hmm. So, of course, with that, there's a lot more youthful birders, and they got this together, and they've got like a Facebook group of almost 700 or something strong.
Okay.
And it's young birders who get out and go birding and you know make fun of it. And so we thought, okay, well, me and some friends of mine decided, well, why can't we have the same here in Africa? Because we're watching all these senior birders, excel and when I say senior, I'm not talking senior citizens, like 40 plus, excel and control sort of the birding scene.
Yes.
But where's the youth?
Yeah.
So we started up a Facebook group, and we were expecting we're going to get like 20 members.
Yes.
And we're sitting on almost 200 at the moment after starting it like 6 months ago.
That's awesome.
So it's really growing. And I mean, these people are getting involved. It started off as a Facebook group.
Okay.
And it's rapidly growing. We've got an age group of minimum 30 and maximum 30. Okay. So obviously we can't do the same limits as the folks in England do, because we don't have as much birders.
Yes.
So 13 and 30, we thought reasonable. Okay, a 13-year-old is not, still in diapers.
Yes.
And a 30-year-old is not, growing grey beard. So, it's still relatively young. And the whole idea was to get the younger birders, who generally have lower lists and less experience and knowledge and stuff, to follow the older birders who are still young, but who have experience, because they've been birding for years and years and years. So that was the whole thing. And the Facebook group started. It's been running now, and it's just gaining momentum. Mm. And it's we post quizzes. It's two quizzes every month.
Mm-hmm.
People then participate. They'll send through their answers anonymously, and they'll get feedback. So at the end of that quiz, the two people who run it, myself and my friend Vanna van der Walt, will then give detailed descriptions as to why that specific bird is that ID.
Oh, awesome. So
it's a learning process. So it's like full-on paragraphs
per
ID. So two of those a month. And then also it's a nice platform for these youthful birds to share stories,
that's
pictures,
brilliant.
Ask advice. I mean, the other day, a chap asked, "What's the best camera setup for birding?"
Yeah, it's a valid question.
It is, because I mean, a lot of people don't really know what cameras to go for bird photography.
Because that's another whole different arm of birding. People get even more excited about that. Yeah. So,
and which type of binoculars to use, where to go birding. It's just, it's a place where the youth can interact. The youth, you're sharing a common interest, and you can then interact. And what's awesome about this youth birding thing is, I remember starting out birding, and you go out birding with the
bullies.
The bullies. And it's nice, and the experience is incredible. You learn a hell of a lot from them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just no, I don't know, it's hard to describe. There's just this different feeling.
Yes.
You go out with the youth, and it's exciting. I mean, just
it is. I mean,
up.
I was lucky enough. So I went on a birding weekend on Saturday. Me and a friend packed up our car with a lovely picnic and headed off to Mkombo Dam and then to Zagelsdrift. And completely by fluke, we bumped into you at Mkombo.
Yeah.
And we joined your group of young birders, because I have a gripe with your young birding group, because I'm excluded, because I am 32. So I now fall in the grey period, the grey box. I'm too old to be in the young birders, and I'm far too young to be with the average birders. So I'm just going to stand here by myself. Maybe I'm going to start like a approaching midlife crisis birding group thing. But John, it was amazing being with you guys, because literally I popped off like seven lifers, because you were like, there's a godwit and there's the yellow wagtail. And it was so amazing to be around you guys. It was really infectious, just the camaraderie and the knowledge sharing and all of that.
And it's so exciting, and it's just it's this completely different feel, and I want to say aura, but I'm not too sure if that's the right word. But it's just, it's so awesome, and it's just so adrenaline pumping and exciting. And I mean, we're busy birding and stuff, and you know, you're birding with adults and you know, the older folk, and you know, they'll come across a bird call and they'll be like, oh, what's, I wonder what that bird call is and stuff like that, and it takes a while to process. With the vast majority of these younger folks, you're walking, and I mean, I know a few people who'll be birding, and they'll get out the car and they won't even raise their binoculars or look around.
Really?
And they're already busy birding. They're just busy firing off bird calls.
That's amazing.
Because they're just picking it up on ear.
Sure.
And they're busy, they're pointing out birds you didn't even, you know, you're just thinking, wow, oh, it's a bunch of tweets and stuff like
that.
And they're busy firing off just with their ears. And a lot of the older generation aren't able to do that. But again, massive generalization, because there are a few who are quite a lot actually who can do that. But it just, it's exciting, and then they'll point out the bird, so they won't be like, okay, black-headed oriole or yellow-throated petrel. They'll be like, oh, black-headed oriole, black-headed oriole.
And then it becomes a competition.
I know, it's just like they're just freaking out. and they're just excited about the birds. And I mean, like, we were busy birding the other day, and again at Mkombo, we then branched off, we went to another reserve called Mabusa, and busy birding around Mabusa, and again the guys in our group were busy freaking out the minute they picked up a bird call.
Awesome.
A Vamba sparrow or red-headed weaver, and they just freak out, and it's just this energy that's infectious, and it's awesome. That's why I'm thoroughly enjoying this whole Youth Africa building.
And it's good, because it's so important, because I mean, the youth nowadays, it seems like all that they do is sit on their cell phones, and you know, in the olden, you know, the world's changed a lot. Gosh, I sound like a bully. But yeah, it's so important that we still encourage the culture of, you know, being involved in nature and having a love for the natural processes and these animals. So, because there's all sorts of conservation things that come along with it, which we'll talk about later. But we've got a question on WhatsApp. So I'm going to give sorry, and I really am a bully. I need to go to the talk on WhatsApp again. Question on WeChat. I'm going to give the first part of the question to you, John. Cool. Speko asks, how many different types of species of birds are there?
So there's well over 10,000
in the world. That's amazing.
In Southern Africa, we've got a list of 970. I'm speaking under correction.
Okay.
970 odd. Sure. So that's Southern Africa. It's a lot.
That's amazing.
It's a lot. Worldwide, there's a few over 10,000. And actually, just speaking about the worldwide birding and stuff, there's a chap called Noah Stryker, who, if you thought my big year was six, or the other five individuals who've done a Southern African big year before me, achieved a lot by seeing 800 in a year. Noah Stryker is knocking socks off of everybody. So what he did was, he said, okay, well, I'm going to take the year and I'm going to try to see if I can get 5,000 birds in the world in a calendar year.
What?
So the previous record was something like 4,200
5,000 species?
Yeah. So 4,200 something was the previous record, again, speaking under correction. But rough estimate. So he's been birding continuously, and he's been living out of a backpack with a pair of binoculars, a spotting scope, and like three shirts, three pants, three underwear type vibe thing. So he's been doing that. He cracked the record with like something ridiculous, like 4 or 5 months still to go.
My gosh.
At the moment, he's well over five. What is he on now? I think he's probably... No, he's well over 5,000.
What?
I think he's on like 5,200 or something like that. Again, under correction. But the fact is he's taken the year to see 5,000. 5,000 was his goal. So he was happy when he got 5,000. Now he's just...
Now he's just driving it in. But who pays for that?
Again,
I want to speak to who pays that. I think
he's got a whole... He must have sponsors of sorts.
My goodness.
I don't know him personally. I've just been following and admiring and drooling on my keyboard from from back home. But it's incredible. So yeah, there's a hell of a lot of birds out there. Over 10,000. So, but I mean, a select few have cracked the magical 9,000 mark.
Gee whiz!
And I'm not quite sure whether there's been one or two who've cracked the 10,000 mark.
That's insane.
But yeah, to put it in perspective, the highest list in Southern Africa that somebody has is Ian Sinclair, who's one of the authors of Sasol.
Yes. What's his list?
He's 930 something, I think.
Sure.
Closely followed by Trevor Hardacre, which is 911 or 912, something like that.
And Trevor's not a bully, by the way.
Yeah. I'll agree with
Trevor,
that.
Trevor, you owe me.
Yeah. I'll agree with that because I know he's going to listen to this.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. Well, I think we're going to go to a music break now, and then I'm going to answer the second part of Speko's question when we come back.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Christmas is on the way, and so is the happiest family event of the year, the Parkview Charity Christmas Market at the George Hay Park in Parkview from the 27th to the 29th of November. The Christmas Market is a weekend of fun, unique arts and crafts, brilliant gift ideas, kids' fun galore, big screen sports, a beer tent, and a champagne and oyster bar with continual live music. Parkview Christmas Market, for a great time, with all proceeds going to charity.
This is CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com. Animal Central on CliffCentral.com.
That was Heart Shaped Box by Goldfish. I think that's going to be a solid summer tune, at least definitely for me. So I have to now answer the second question of Sebeko's WeChat question. Firstly, if you've got any questions or you want to drop us a message, you can get hold of us on Twitter, Facebook, or on WeChat. So Sebeko now asks me, what is the best pet bird to have? So Sebeko, the best pet bird to have is no pet bird, because if you look at birds, they are some of the most amazing animals, and they fly, and flying is a completely natural behavior, and if you put a bird in a cage, it can't fly. So it's much more rewarding to look at birds in the wild and to start birding and paying attention to what type of species than to have a bird in a cage. So if you want a pet, get a dog or a cat and start birding so you can enjoy birds. So Muntu, who is my co-pilot today, he's pressing all the buttons that terrify me, actually asked a very valid question during the break. He asked, who verifies the numbers that people have on their lists? Because I could wake up one morning and just start ticking, couldn't I?
Yeah. It can be a controversial topic, but everybody sort of follows the honor system. So you don't want to be that one idiot who falsifies a record.
Yeah.
And add something on and claims it. We call those people stringers. So birders have a very weird lingo.
Yes, please tell us about that.
There's a whole bunch of jargon for birders. So if you're a lister, then you're obsessed with listing. There's so much. I'm bound to forget some of them, but I'll try my best. Lister is, you know, you keep a lot of lists, and all you're really interested about is listing. This one can come off rather interesting. But if you gripped off, it means you are very envious and green of the fact that somebody's seen a bird that you hasn't.
I'm gripped off with you about your 800.
Yes,
lists.
And likewise me about
you're
the
gripped
snow
off
egret.
About my snow egret. Yes, okay, yeah. We're having a grip off session.
I guess you could say that.
Moving on.
Yeah. So then you get a twitcher. So a twitcher is somebody who's he constantly chases rarities.
Okay.
So here in South Africa, we have the South African Rare Bird News Alerts run by Trevor Hardacre. And those are emails that come out. So people come across a rare bird, take a photograph, or not necessarily a photograph, but generally rarities, photographs are needed so that the ID can be confirmed.
Yeah, verified. Okay.
Send that through to Trevor. Trevor blasts out an email to the birding community and the subscribers to SARBN. And that generally throws the birding community
into a
turmoil. and twitchers will generally get onto the next flight out.
That's amazing.
And chase the bird, whether it's in Cape Town
regardless,
or Namibia or
they
whatever.
Get there.
So I would call myself somewhat of a twitcher, considering there was a citrine wagtail earlier on this year that popped up. And I was on, I looked at flights, and then it was too expensive for my liking. But then all of a sudden the flights decided to, drop on the Sunday. So the Sunday, I'm looking at prices. Then I was like, no, stuff it. I'm going to go for this. So I booked my flights at the Sunday night, and then Monday morning I was on the next flight down to Cape Town. And then, myself and Vanna got the citrine along with a lot of other people. I mean, the day we were there must have been close on 90 birders.
What?
Just busy hanging around.
And how long was the Citrine there for?
Ooh, he was only there for like the weekend. Okay. The folks who went on the Tuesday, so we got it on the Monday. The people who went on the Tuesday, I think were the last to see it, and then the Wednesday it was gone.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and then that, which leads me to another term. So if you dip on something, it's not like dipping a Mari biscuit into. It's, you've dipped, you dip on a bird, so you miss a bird. Oh. So you try for something, but you miss it.
Okay. Yeah. So like, when I did my Twitch for the snowy, it actually was quite convenient because I was going to Cape Town to visit my family. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in Cape Town. I need to go see the snowy. So if I had have gone to Cape Town, missed the snowy, I would have dipped on the snowy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because I got the snowy, you were gripping off on me.
No, I was.
And we all had
off.
A merry Twitch. You were gripped off.
Yes.
This is amusing. This is why we love birding. It's entertaining as well.
Yeah. And then what else is there? There's... if you are, there's so much. Mm. In fact, there's actually.
What's the sticky stretchy something you said about? It's a sticky list or a stretchy list.
Stringy.
Stringy.
Oh, there we go.
That's it.
So if you string something, it means that you're lying about something.
Okay.
So you're stringing people along.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a stringer.
Okay.
Okay. You're lying about birds on your list. If you are. What can I say? Oh, and then another one that the youth use nowadays, which originated from some of my friends, and somehow it has spread, but I absolutely love it. If you destroy something,
yes.
It means that it's not like you physically destroy something.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you so if you're taking photographs,
yes.
And you utterly, like, get the best
nail it.
Shot, you, like, nail it. You say, "Oh, I destroyed that." So it's that's a weird one, but it's just spreading. Another one is smash. So yeah. If you, it sounds very violent, but it's not.
It's how passionate we are about our hobby.
So if you so let's say at Mkomo Mania this past weekend, which is the youth Africa birding thing we were at, and you were there, you got the lesser blackback owl, for example.
Yes.
So you'd be like, oh yeah, you'll be in conversation. Yeah, okay. No, did you get the lesser blackback owl? Yeah, no, I did. Smashed it. And meanwhile, the thing's still then perfectly fine.
Yes,
so
we haven't touched it.
Yeah.
Let's get this straight.
No less blackback girls were harmed
things.
In this
we
movie.
We look at things and get very excited. But that's awesome. And I think it's so nice to see. And the bullies can't say that we're making weird words because their words are also weird. So it's all, I find it very, very entertaining. But now tell us, how did you get into birding in the first place?
Oh, my family has been interested in wildlife since the 1946.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I was born, 8 months old, I've been going to the Kruger National Park.
Okay.
And then obviously every single year I've been going, and you know, my parents obviously raised me and my sister to make sure that we appreciate and and enjoy wildlife and, and stuff like that. And then as I started getting older, at my school, I would generally find myself, you know, in the library busy looking at the wildlife section and all those field guides and stuff like that. And it actually started off with, you know, I started exploring a whole bunch of things and mammals and going through the mammal guides, and then it spread to bats, and I got thoroughly involved with bats to the extent that I was helping do research at the Transvaal Museum, Transvaal Museum, and, you know, joining the Gauteng Bat Interest Group and stuff like that. But then with that, I started getting an interest in birds. And I think I was 12 years old when I first started getting interested in birds. Mm-hmm. And we were in Kruger. And
that's not girls, by the way. It's bird
birds. Yeah. So we were in Kruger, and we flushed a Franklin off the side of the road. And then took the bird book, family bird book. Started looking through it. And I can't recall if I actually remember or managed to ID the bird.
Mm-hmm.
ID meaning identify. But then when we got back to camp, I remember just, you know, recording the birds I saw. So the first one on my list was Southern Yellow-billed Hornbill. And that was bird number one. And then I carried on sort of recording casually and stuff like that. And then the listing bug bit. And that, you know, I found myself more interested in trying to rack up the numbers on my list than I did enjoying the birds. But as I got higher and higher on my list, that changed again.
Okay.
So I enjoyed listing, but I thoroughly enjoyed looking at the birds as well. And you know, then looking into the conservation side of things and raising awareness around conservation initiatives and stuff like that. So it was a brief little moment of time where I was really only interested in my listing.
Okay.
But yeah, so I started young. I mean, I was 12, but I mean, I've known people who've started when they were like still practically in diapers.
Wee little things. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so it's been a while, but it's been incredible. I mean, I can't. Birding, many people I know, and there was a fantastic quote. One of our guides says, for the love of me, I can't remember who it was. But they had interviews conducted on them for our blog.
Okay.
And he said, birding is not a hobby, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah,
it's and fun. I know so many people whose lives have been changed by birding. Mm. You know, whether it be getting them back onto the straight and narrow, you know, after veering off and stuff like that, and getting them out of difficult times in life, because it just gives your mind something to focus on. It's not a hobby. It's so much more.
And I think the best part about it is it can be done everywhere and anywhere. Mm. Like when you're driving through the Kruger and you Impala, elephant, everyone's. As you and I will both know, we bloody stop. Yeah. There's a little brown thing in
brakes
stop. So it can be done anywhere. I mean, in traffic, and I mean, even you know, I live in North Riding, and in our complex, guaranteed there will be a termite rise by our front gate, and I just sit there and the swallows just to watch them dive bomb. You know, you can bird anywhere, anytime, at any point. So it's a lifestyle, because it does become fully integrated into your life. But I think, unfortunately, as with all of our other wild animals in the wild, you know, birds are having quite a tough time, especially certain individuals. Do you want to chat to us about that?
So there's a lot of, I'm trying myself to get involved in the conservation side of things and raising awareness around, you know, the plight of the birds and stuff like that. And people are going about their day-to-day life here in South Africa thinking, you know, they probably don't even know about the birds they see, let alone the birds that are in
danger,
in some serious trouble. Our vultures, the other day, the IUCN, which is the they run the conservation
international,
For the love of me, I can't remember. I just referred as IUCN.
International something of conservation net or something. It's very important and international and about conservation.
So they're just the status of a species, so whether they're vulnerable or endangered and stuff like that, is generally run by them. So they released stats the other day with regards to our vultures. Now when you go to Kruger and you see these vultures chilling on a carcass, you're like, oh, okay, nice vulture, whatever. But you know, you don't think that, you know, how long are these guys going to be around here? I never thought about that. I mean, I'd see a vulture and be like, oh, okay, cool, a vulture. Tick. So now the IUCN the other day released stats that 4 of our 7 vultures are now critically endangered.
Really?
3 of them are endangered.
Shucks.
So it's, yeah. Seven of our vultures got upgraded status-wise. 4 critically endangered and 3 endangered.
Shocking.
And yeah, one of the critically endangered ones is white-backed vulture, which was
really?
I mean, I used to see them every time I go to Kruger.
Yeah.
And hearing now they're like critically endangered. So
and that's
I
happening within your lifetime.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know.
That's crazy.
So I nearly fell off my rocker. Yeah, so I try my best to raise awareness, and along with a whole bunch of other people. I mean, BirdLife International and South Africa together are doing one massive job in raising
awareness.
So that's
BirdLife International and BirdLife South Africa.
Yes, yeah. So they're trying to do a social media storm and stuff like that, you know, about hashtag love vultures.
Okay.
So they're busy doing that, as well as doing educational videos and stuff like that. So it's imperative that you know, people always ask, they say to me, I saw a picture the other day where it was like a funny cartoon, like, you know, Zapira type cartoon or whatever. And it was a fairly large, heavy set bloke sitting behind his computer screen with glasses and a nerdy appearance. And the caption was, 21st century conservationists, ...
That's spot on, yeah.
Now, a part of me agrees with that, because people sit behind their computer and you know, babble on about how you shouldn't do this and shouldn't do that, but they don't do anything.
Exactly, or they just throw around their opinions.
Yeah. So, however, and a lot of people tend to clump creating awareness and social awareness around that, which I must disagree with, because I think conservation, awareness is a key, awareness and education is a key component of conservation. If you don't have those two, how are you going to conserve stuff?
Exactly.
So you need to educate people. You need to educate not only the youth, which mm-hmm. is what we're trying our best to mm-hmm. do now, but the general population as well.
Mm-hmm.
You need to create awareness. So stuff like the social media storm, people are sitting back, they're like, oh, well, is this in fact working?
Yeah.
But it is. That's exactly. the thing. It's because with you seeing something pop up on your Facebook, how many times do we sit on Facebook every day?
Exactly. All the time.
Or Twitter. And we're opening stuff up and the news and stuff like that. And, you know, even though we might be just like scroll over it or whatever and be like, oh, okay, well, another feed.
Yeah.
The thing is it's still going into your head.
Exactly.
So you're still seeing a picture of a vulture or something like that.
Yeah.
So even though it might be minuscule to some and large to others, the fact is you're still making awareness, creating
exactly.
awareness.
Exactly, and that can't be bad.
There we go. So that's my thing, is without awareness and without education, there can't be conservation.
No, you're absolutely spot
and
on.
Those are two massive components.
And conservation needs to come back to the people. Mm. I think the problem is historically conservation has been done by governmental bodies, and possibly in the past our government bodies actually did that and they did it efficiently, whereas nowadays they do not. Our South African government is failing conservation, failing every single day. So we need to create the awareness and passion from ground level so that our South Africans realize, because it's our heritage, ultimately. Mm. These birds, and I mean, the joy about birds and wildlife is that everyone can see them. Mm. And you don't have to go to the Kruger. There's birds in your garden. I had a little sparrowhawk in my garden in North Riding the other day. I nearly fell, as you said, fell off my rocker. You know, they're there. And it's, you know, if our government fails us, our heritage is going to be lost. So it's so flippin' important that people get involved. And so what can listeners do to get involved, and, you know, how can they, apart from picking up binoculars and start looking at birds?
So when it comes to conservation, I can only but reiterate the fact that awareness needs to be created.
Mm-hmm.
It's entirely up to listeners as to how they want to contribute and how they want to go about this. But you know, there's also a stigmatism attached to helping conservation, is that you have to donate money and you have to go to events and stuff like that. But you don't. You don't. Go onto BirdLife South Africa's website, a Facebook page or website or whatever. BirdLife International, Facebook page, website. They have a whole host of conservation-related cartoons and pictures and awareness creating things that they've made so that people can share them and let it go viral. And that's the thing, is they're trying to make this hashtag love vultures
and it
go
works.
Viral.
Look
and
at the Tulliver. So I don't know if our listeners saw that. There was a big flurry amongst the birding world that a new bird species had been discovered in South Africa. It was a photo of a very poorly photoshopped. Well, it was two birders. I think most of us knew what was going on. But it was basically this great discovery of a new species. And actually it turned out that it was... How did they do it again?
Yeah, well, Tulliver's an anagram for vulture. So it was a very clever thing. They took a picture of a leopard-faced vulture and they photoshopped it. I mean, they made this thing look weird and wonderful, like something out of South America.
Yeah.
And the whole point was, you know, new species discovered in South Africa.
Got so everybody excited. Went.
Some people were like, you know, where can we get this thing? Let's go take it. They're like really.
It's
really
not even
keen.
On the list. They were going to write it onto the list.
So they were really keen. Others were like, okay, well, this is a hoax. Mm. Some of the birders are like, okay, we can clearly see that this isn't.
But there must be method behind.
But there must
the
be
madness,
method behind behind this whole thing, which there was, because a week or two, or whatever later, BirdLife South Africa then released a video where it took step by step. And it worked backwards from the picture of the so-called Tulliver and back to the original leopard-faced vulture. And every single Photoshop step they then took away and undid. And it slowly came to the leopard-faced vulture picture. Mm. And their thing is if you can get so excited about a new species, why can't you get excited about one that's dying?
The threatened species. Exactly. And so it was fantastic.
I thought it was
absolutely brilliant. And it worked. It went viral. It got people's attention.
That's the thing.
And it is such an important message.
And even if people did get absolutely miffed and irritated and shocked, and I mean, I saw
it's
people
still got the point across.
Thank you. I saw people losing it with BirdLife. They're like, "How can you do this?" and all that stuff. But the fact is it grabbed your attention.
Did it not
grab your attention?
Exactly.
Therefore, created awareness.
Exactly.
So, and that was the whole thing behind it. I thought I'd back it completely. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it was a fantastic move by BirdLife South Africa. And so if listeners want to help contribute, All I want to say is that you don't have to donate money. Yeah. Yes, it's a bonus if you've got a few change lying around.
And it'll get you lots of karma points. Donating money. That's my thing. Donating money to worthwhile charitable and conservation things gets you lots of karma points.
And
but you don't have
badge.
To.
Yeah. So you don't have to donate money. But if you want to, by all means. Mm. Okay. But what really counts is if you help spread awareness.
Yeah.
So sharing a post, excuse me, by BirdLife South Africa or BirdLife International on your Facebook page, that's going to reach all of your friends, how many 500, 600 friends you may have. And they can then share your post and then can reach their 500, 600
knock
friends.
Knock on, knock on, knock
before
on.
Before you know it, it's going to be floating around South Africa. And then eventually they, who will, I'm sure, have international friends, will be going international. You just need a chain reaction like that to go forth.
Yeah.
And what I always love to say is that your action by yourself may be only equivalent to one drop in the ocean, but the actions of many can are the equivalent to the ocean itself. So that's what people need to get in their head is no matter the difference you make, the as small as it is, you're still making a difference.
Exactly.
And that's what people need to get in their head is something stupid and, well, I say stupid, but small as sharing a thing on Facebook.
It makes a difference.
It makes a difference. Whether you
and
like
it can
not.
For positive or negative. I mean, crisis, if Miley Cyrus can get as much damn attention for the ridiculous stuff that she does, why can't our animals and
exactly.
our conservation get
exactly.
it? And I think also one of the most exciting things that people can do is something like citizen science.
Yes.
Which, I mean, that's really, you're actually contributing to science and knowledge just by, you know, giving feedback on what you see or when you're in the bush or whatever. So it really is pretty unlimited. And John, you've been an absolute treat to have in. I think we've really got our joint message about birds far and wide. So it's not just for bullies, it is for young people. And I have made myself an honorary young birder.
By all means.
thank you. I'll leave my Zimmer frame at home. But thank you all for listening. It's going to be Sharon back next week, and then I'm going to be back the week after that. Be good.
This is CliffCentral.com.